Navy or Coast Guard.
Well, I like a 5-minute break.
Good job. Good call.
Yeah.
All right, we'll turn next to the President's Report.
Thank you very much. I want to start with John Osborne and Brian Russell. This is an important summer coming up from a construction context. And I would like for them to brief the board on the projects that will be underway this summer. There will be some disruption to the campus, and I think it's important for the board to stay abreast of major projects like the ones that you're going to be briefed on now. So, John and Brian, please.
Thank you. Your regular report that has the profile of all of our capital projects, major projects, is contained in your agenda booklet. But today we're going to focus mainly on summer. Most of you know from having been on campus last summer that every summer that we have is a very busy summer and oftentimes quite disruptive. We take advantage of the reduced activity on the campus to go into areas and do things that we could not do normally do during the fall and spring semesters. And so that's why it's very busy and disruptive. We start planning for what we're going to do during what I call the 90-day window of opportunity between May 15 and August 15, as far back as January, when we start prioritizing activities and selecting what we should do. Last summer was very busy. Summer of 12 will be just as busy. We were very busy last summer to the extent that we had roads tore up and steam lines put in and so forth. Brian and I even won a lunch bet with Deborah Wilkins over one of those projects. She had Annie up at the restaurant to pay for the fact that we did get it done on time. But anyway, we will have a lot of projects that we will be asked during the summer of 12, are you really going to get this done in time? And the answer is going to be yes. We don't start anything unless we think we can get it done within that 90-day window for the most part. Sometimes we don't have opportunity to get it absolutely completed by then, but for the most part, we will complete a lot of work this summer, including make a lot of headway with our Downing project this summer. But I'm going to turn it over to Brian, let him walk you through a list of those kinds of activities and projects for summer of 12.
First, I'd like to say thank you for having us again, and I can't express the cooperation of the entire university doing any and all of the construction projects that take place on our campus. Bob, you're sitting over here, but Bob has a phenomenal staff of support that helps us with our IT and our AV. We cooperate with our faculty and our staff and the DFM, and Jeff is invaluable, parking, transportation. It takes a tremendous amount of effort of the university. Dr. Ransdell, your support is always appreciated, and it just takes a tremendous amount to coordinate everything that happens. So I always stress communication, communication, communication. Howard Bailey's been a tremendous support, supporting us. But I want to say thank you to everybody that helps us at all the time. So it is exciting. Last summer, I think we completed about $6 million worth of work in about 90 days. I think it was about 17 projects. And with that, we'll start some of the things that are kind of out of sight, out of mind, that we take for granted every day, but it's part of retention. It's part of why our students stay here. It's part of new freshmen and their parents when they come to our campus, about the landscaping, about the parking lots. And John mentioned the other day one of our potential upcoming athletes. His two comments were?
I was intrigued by the comment that people were friendly and the place was clean.
That's not true on every campus, so I think that's a tremendous statement for the grounds and the people that work here every day. This is a short list. This is actually a very short list of projects that we're kind of highlighting as some summer projects. I won't go through each one, but we'll go here. Parking lot resurfacing and striping. We have a long list here that we've just generated. You have a fairly new parking lot, but it's very important that we coat these parking lots on a timely basis. We rotate them through. We restripe them. And you say, why do we do that? We do it to reduce overall long-term cost. And when you put a coating on these parking lots, you actually extend the useful life, and we don't have to tear them out and put them back. So there is a cost savings to actually maintaining. So these are kind of maintaining projects we'll be working on. This is the colonnade and the seating. The reason I show this picture, this structure has been here a long time. It is very historic. It is an icon on our campus. People really identify with this. A lot of people that come back to our campus. And we have, this whole area has deteriorated. And we have a project that's going to start immediately after commencement. And we're going to be making repairs to the actual colonnade structure itself, but also this seating area. As you can see in these photographs, over time has really, really deteriorated, and we've got a project to make restoration and repair of these. It's also become very unsafe, which we continually, every summer, are spending a lot of dollars fixing our walkways, steps, etc. But as you can see, this is an important project for the university, and it'll get lots of years of useful life. Next project I'm showing, again, is very historic. It's prominent. It's right up College Boulevard or College Street. It is a tremendous busy section. These limestone steps, I guess, have been here since the beginning of our university. And we are going to do a total replacement of the limestone steps. And as you can see, there's a lot of people in the background, but you can also see that the limestone steps over time have deteriorated to a point that not only are they unsafe, they need to be totally replaced. Have that done.
What are you replacing it with? Are you replacing it with
limestone?
Okay, so you'll keep the historic integrity of
absolutely.
The product.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Tate Page Hall. This building, even though we're scheduled at some point to raise this facility in the future, when the timing is appropriate, we have, even though we've moved most of everybody to Gary Ransdell Hall, this building is now the swing space and has completely been repurposed with other academic activities. And we have some water infiltration issues on this building, so we are currently putting a new cap to extend its useful life of the roof. We've got to stop the water. A lot of the water that comes in during our storms and rains, et cetera, are actually going through these metal skin panels. These will be corrected this summer. We have Downing University Center.
Going back to that to Tate Page Hall, we've got to keep it up because people live there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's a fine line because we don't want to invest too much into this building because it's got a short life. As soon as we can build a new College of Business building and renovate Grace Hall, this building will come down. So we have to find that right balance of keeping the inhabitants comfortable while not investing into major renovation.
Exactly. We are very mindful of that, and typically if we were going to make this a full replacement, we would replace the panels in the window system of this building in total.
Yeah. We're putting skins,
which is very appropriate. It'll stop the water infiltration as leaking into the classrooms. It'll help the appearance of this facility. This is selective demolition. The Downing University Center, we just recently had, we're always having meetings, but we have released and awarded some early bid packages for the project in total. We've got this project, it's a 24-month schedule. But part of the plan was to release some early stages of this project so that we can prepare, get ready, do a better job with our engineering, and make the project.
Tell them which door you're standing at when you took this shot.
The old SGA,
but
it's going into the
SGA
office, right?
Bingo.
Yeah.
SGA office was to your right, and the subway doors are down to your left. Yeah. All that's been taken out in the last few weeks.
So this is our ground floor, and this is the upper floor and bowling alley space. And this area here was where our tennis...
We need to back out now.
Ping pong table slash pool table in this area, but it just shows kind of taking the finishes down. We're to a skeleton stage, but those two spaces are critical in the schedule and timing, so we've already gotten those taken away and cleaned up. We also issued an early site package to replace some of our aging steam lines. We did that last summer. This is the front face Avenue of Champions of the Downing University Center. We are actually making and replacing these steam lines and putting a man tunnel because the new facility will have components of the building additions that will actually go over some of these lines. So we're preparing for that. So the project, when we release, as John and I both commented, June the 7th is a really big day because that's the date that we'll be receiving the bids for the total renovation of this project. So I think our architectural team in the last 16 months preparing has spent a total of 30,000 man hours preparing the documents for this project. I know we don't, you know, when you start to think about those hours, it's incredible, but we have firms that your engineering firm, your architectural firm, your specialty firms that have contributed to this project and get documents ready is quite phenomenal, quite impressive. This is the site that we're working on. John has challenged us to prepare and deliver a fully functional temporary dining facility to support the DUC project by July the 31st of this summer. We are currently released that bid package, mobilized, and we're full steam ahead so that we can feed our students for next fall.
We're putting up a metal building there that will seat 600 people and we'll be serving meals in August. Any bets?
For 2 years, and then it comes down and the lawn will be restored.
That's yes. Correct. This is purely a temporary facility.
And then what will that torn down building, what will that become?
We've already pre-sold the building as part of the project, which was a beneficial move to the contractor as well as us, and then we will restore the space to green space. So it's a lot of work just to create temporary facility, but you've heard us in our reports about the building. The fresh food company will be replaced in the first year, and it will be located in there, and in year two it will be the food court. So by one side of the building in DUC, then the other side of DUC, the replacement eating area for those areas will be this building.
Will those equipment and fixtures be transferable over to the new building?
A lot of them will be.
Much of the equipment will be new, and it will go back into the dining areas.
But this is something that somebody may come through campus that knows any one of you and may call you. I can't believe they got that ugly building. Our standards have really gone down with a metal building right in the middle of our campus. What are they thinking? So you may get some of that with this temporary facility that's going to be really visible right in the middle. Or why are they building on the south lawn? I thought that was going to stay green space. So just it's important that you all kind of know what the plan is here because there'll be a lot of assumptions that will be made, I expect.
maybe a nice sign on the building that says temporary facility, and maybe a sign on each quarter saying temporary facility.
It is causing some concern. And they think that once it's there, you get used to it, you'll want to keep it. And that's not the case. So it's we have already pre-sold the building. When we're through using it, the real owner is going to take it back away. So that's the best way to answer the question. Is it temporary? We've already pre-sold it.
Well, part of the contract, just for scheduling, we say the DUC project is to be finished by July of 2014. In May of 2014, this facility will be taken down. We will restore the site and we'll be ready for fall classes. And when they come back, fall 2014, this will all be green space. And we're moving forward. So we're really going to be disruptive for this summer, and till next summer we'll put this back in shape. So we've got a plan, and so far we're following the plan, and it's been very exciting. It's been a very challenging project for everyone, but it is very exciting. This building is what we call the Rock House. Right after commencement, this facility will be taken down. This will become green space. Another large project that we're starting, we've got the opportunity and have been very successful on the top of the hill with what we're calling the high voltage infrastructure project, is replacing an old 4160 volt system. That is the only 4160 volt system left in Bowling Green, Kentucky. So as we have the opportunity, we're replacing that system with what they call a 12,470 volt system. And this is what we call our south loop. It's going to be a large trench that will start after the commencement. And we must get that dug, conduits put in the ground, covered back up, restore the site, before school starts. So that's a very large project, but it's a very beneficial project. While we're on the south loop, we have completed the north loop, but we are studying adding three more buildings to our north loop project, which would be Potter Hall, which would be Weatherby Hall, be Garrett. That would allow us to remove one of our substations that supports the university that's very aging. It's called Mimosa Substation Lot. And if we can do our research and get that work done, we'll also include that this summer. And then we'll be able to take some overhead lines down and do some other things that will only make our school more reliable. So we continue to tick away at making this campus a lot more sustainable.
The electrical system that's being replaced is how old is the electrical system in this south loop?
I don't know. But it's well over 40 years old.
I was going to say 50, 60 years maybe.
Most of these facilities were built in the 60s, so it's probably 43 years old.
How close to complete, like 100% complete, is that electrical infrastructure replacement?
Do what?
How close to complete is the whole replacement of that electrical structure?
Well, if we do this project this summer,
right?
This is just the conduit and the pad.
I know.
Okay.
Between that and everything else we've done, how much more do we have to go? Yeah. I think it would probably be in vicinity of 50%. We still got a lot of electrical infrastructure to replace, and between what we've done and what we're doing, 50%.
Okay, and then the project, if it starts, the top of the hill project starts in August and then goes to August 13, that moves you a little closer to the end.
We have actually replaced and made an entire loop of the north loop of the top of the campus. Not all buildings have been connected to the new service,
right.
But the overhead lines of redundancy, as we get the funding in our maintenance and our critical needs, each year we're tackling more pieces. What it does for our campus is, like yesterday, we had a very large storm. Mm-hmm. Before, if we lost a substation, we're just down. Now we have the opportunity to turn switches off, turn switches on, and backfeed power from different substations in different areas to keep our buildings up and operational. We're trying to accomplish that on our South Loop project, and it's going to take time, but we have in our six-year capital plan a $35 million project that was second on our priority list that we keep asking the state to help us fund so we could get it done, but because we're not receiving those funds, the university has committed over the last 10 years to keep tackling bits and pieces on our own because we can't wait for it to fail.
Our greatest deferred maintenance and deferred capital renewal is underground.
Yeah.
You've heard us say that before. Every analysis that's been performed by outside consultants is confirmed. What you don't see is where you've got your biggest problem. Above ground, sure, you got problems, but the reason is you're facing very major failures where multiple buildings would go down. In some cases, it would take days to patch one part of it, and then you've only done a part of it. So we're doing significant sections with our own money in the meantime, and in doing so, we hope to eliminate some of these substations. BGMU, to their credit, built years ago a multi-million dollar substation that would accommodate the entire campus in one new modern location across railroad tracks on South Street,
right,
and replace five smaller old substations that were around the community feeding the campus. And with the project on top of the hill, we will be able to eliminate one of the small old substations. And the thing I like about that as much as anything is much of the overhead power lines that are on College Heights Boulevard can go away when we do that substation replacement.
Our next project is Jones-Jaggers. It was built in 1969. This summer, we're going to be replacing the unit ventilators and the fan coil units within that building. This is something that last summer we worked very diligently on replacing some of these similar type units in what we call an industrial education building. This not only helps our efficiency, but it's also going to provide a better comfort for the occupants of this facility. Most of this work that we're going to do in this building is going to be done on off hours because Jones-Jaggers really never shuts down throughout the year. So we'll be doing a lot of evening work, a lot of weekends, etc. It's a very important project that we're going to be working on this summer to replace some very old infrastructure. We also are continuing, this is our third summer that we are continuing to work on our old historic rock walls that are located all over our campus. We have a very skilled mason who specializes. We've already got him totally booked for the summer to just continue to work through our campus and make repairs. If you have a chance, notice some of his work. It's coming down Avenue of Champions, College Heights Boulevard. It's quite impressive to make those more, just to make the repairs. We also are going to do another series of walkways on our campus. And as you can see, there's still work to be done, but we did a safety walk with SGA the other night, one of the largest groups we've ever had go through our campus. I've been participating in those every year. John has done that. And it's amazing is that when you take that walk around our campus, how much improvement that has been done on our walkways, our lighting, and it makes it a lot safer. But these are some of the projects that we'll be working on. Some of our steps and things that are on our campus have, just water and wear, deterioration, will all be continue to be worked on to make our campus safer for the number of students that we have. And that completes a lot of the summer projects that we're working on. Again, thanks for all the cooperation.
Questions for John or Brian?
That's no question, but I sure hate to see that rock house go down. You know, when you all gave a little dissertation of what all went there, you left out, or somebody left out something. That housed the football team for a short period of time, and I had the great distinction of living there. If those old walls could tell stories, I probably wouldn't be here.
Probably got to remove them very carefully.
They've been talking. That's why we're taking it down.
That's why it has to be torn down.
Yeah, for sure.
Can you give him a rock from it? Can you give Jim a couple rocks?
Oh, it'd be great.
We'll get you a rock.
Is there a salvage for the rocks?
Well, the rocks, coincidentally, are not what we would call recyclable type of rock for another structure. And they've got mortar on them. What I mean by that is, in order to resalvage it, you've got to take the mortar off. The labor just to do that would be enormous. And then, is it really usable? And the answer is, no one really can use it in a modern application. We've had requests for salvage in the building. We have not put up salvage rights. You would have to bid it and actually go through a very extensive process to be able to have a salvageable situation where you recycle it. So we are letting
We're going to use a little bit of the stone that we get off the basement portion for some landscaping opportunities. We've offered it up for the Alumni Center to use some of it. We just have minimal use, but we are going to have a few pieces that we're going to keep for historic reasons. But basically, it once it comes down, it's down.
Well, but in the meantime, Habitat will come in. We will invite them to come in and salvage anything they can. We always have. And then the house will be used, quite frankly, as a training center for the fire department and potentially even the police. Then it will come down.
Has it been properly documented as well?
Yes. Yes. The local folks from have come and...
particularly since anthropology and archaeology has been in that building.
Fully documented.
But it's sitting on stone. I mean, it doesn't even have footers. I mean, it's sitting on stone. It would be impossible to renovate that building because you'd have to go back in and build a substructure, a foundation. It's just termite infested.
It was then too.
Your termites cannot take it out.
That was 50 years ago.
Okay.
They conserved money back in those days.
Let me mention one project that I just want to call to your attention. We will put material together and send it to you in due course. But one of the items on your list here on page 46 is the nursing physical therapy facility that will be built by the medical center. You all are aware of that project. We've been keeping you posted on that over the last year or two. With the General Assembly completing a state budget, I use the term loosely, for the next biennium. One of the things included in that state budget, as Robin reported on, was authorization to proceed with this lease. So the lease documents are being drafted, and we'll get those to you shortly. Now, this will not be a building that we will own. It'll be a medical center built and funded, bonded building, and we're simply going to lease it. There will probably be a groundbreaking in early June. If I had to predict right now, it'll be medical center's call, but we'll be invited since we'll be the primary tenant. I'll be getting those lease documents to you sometime in the next few weeks. And that will be a groundbreaking, and our intent, that building is scheduled to be complete by the midsummer, next summer, 2013, in which we will then move our School of Nursing, nursing curricula, baccalaureate and above, baccalaureate and graduate program nursing programs into that facility, as well as the Doctor of Physical Therapy degree program, which will have begun in June of 13. And we'll go into that building as well. And so I just wanted you to be aware of that one. When you get information from me in due course regarding the lease, that's just a little background on that project. And again, a good way to get an academic building that will allow us to significantly grow the size of our undergraduate nursing programs. We're using the term double the size of our baccalaureate nursing program, but that may not be exact, but Gordon, it'll be close to it. And again, financed through the tuition that the students will pay at the undergraduate and graduate level to cover the cost of the lease. So it's a good plan and a way to continue to make progress, particularly in our healthcare disciplines. That's all of the facilities report. I want to call on Robin Taylor to give you a wrap-up of the 2012 General Assembly. Higher education was not front and center at this particular...
I shouldn't even sit, but thanks to Debbie for lining me her glasses so I can at least read my short report. As all of you know, the General Assembly came to a close on April the 12th, and really not much changed at all. In fact, I don't think anything changed at all from when I reported to you at the committee meetings. The budget passed with the governor's original recommendation of 6.4% reduction to higher ed, and that was, as you know, $5 million roughly to WKU. There were no capital projects included in the budget at all. There were no agency bond project authorizations included in the budget for the coming biennium, the 2012-14. What that meant to us was a $22 million project for the WKU Honors College International Center building. So that did not materialize. And we were, however, able to get the $16.5 million that we needed to finish the DUC project. They agreed to move it to the current year. So that authorization came to us in the current year, but that allows us to finish our project for DUC. So that was very important. And there was a lot of negotiation. And as I indicated to you all at the committee meetings, we really owe a big thanks to Jody Richards, who got in there and fought for that. But I say fought. Honestly, the speaker and the chairman of the Appropriations Committee were very agreeable. They did not want to see a project halted on the campus. So they were very happy to find a solution that worked for everybody. And the Senate had no issue with it either. We monitored about 75 bills, which is way fewer, about half fewer than we would normally be looking at in general legislative session, particularly a long session, as this one was. And we look at bills that have a lot of indirect impact, a lot of stuff at K-12 we look at as well. I mean, we just review those, monitor them, and see where they end up. Only about 8 ended up signed into law, and that doesn't include the budget bills. And there are multiple budget bills, judicial, executive, legislative, and we look at all those as well. The only one of those 8 bills that had any real direct impact was a bill that we worked on a good bit with the Council on Post-Secondary Education. It was a follow-up to our advanced practice doctorate bill that from the year before. This was Senate Bill 131. It was sponsored by Senator David Givens. The bill that we passed the year before, allowing us the advanced practice doctorate programs, allowed each comprehensive university to have a maximum of 3. But that bill also allowed for a report back to the Education Committee from the Council on Post-Secondary Education as to whether or not that there should be a different approach, more or less, or whatever. So the council, after a lot of discussion among the presidents and the council, the recommendation was to have a minimum of 2 advanced practice doctorate degrees at each comprehensive university and 6 at large. So that would allow some universities to have more, depending on the need and the opportunity to be able to do them. So that bill passed. So effectively now there are 18 total advanced practice doctorate programs available. No specific, but you can have 18 total available to comprehensive universities, 2 at each institution and 6 at large. We now have 3, meaning there are only 5 at large left available. The bill also states that in 5 years the council can come back and recommend to the legislature to add more after 5 years or when they're all exhausted. So anyway, we supported that bill. It was no debate, no discussion, and it went through with no issues. A little excitement on the Senate side that had nothing to do with our bill. Other bills that we looked at that passed that dealt just for your information so you have a general sense, there was a bill that passed on the for-profit colleges oversight. a lot, as I mentioned, dealing with K-12. There was a bill on the Kentucky Higher Education Student Loan Corporation. There's an open records bill and some firearms regulation. The firearms regulation did not, at least they said it wasn't going to apply to us, but had unanimous support, House and Senate. And then there was one piece of major legislation that we all followed. We mentioned this, I believe, when we met back at the committee meetings, and that was House Bill 260, which was the University of Pikeville bill. That bill initially was intended to create, to bring University of Pikeville in as the seventh comprehensive ninth. University, as a comprehensive university. That bill ended as a scholarship program for all Cole County students. And what that scholarship program would do is, if you lived in a Cole County, east or west, if you lived in a Cole County, then you could take a scholarship program funded by the state and use that at a public or private university that's located in a Cole County. The House had that bill as only a limited number of counties in eastern Kentucky in the conference committee. The Senate negotiated that bill to include all Cole counties. In the end, it didn't pass. They got to the very last day, and I guess they ran out of time or other things. But they ultimately didn't pass House Bill 260 at all. But it moved from all about University of Pikeville to all about scholarships for kids in Cole counties. We favored the Senate change in that bill at the end because we have WKUO, which is located in Davis County, which is a coal producing county. So that means that our students would be able to use that scholarship to attend WKUO. I expect that bill will come back in some form, whether it's this exact form, I don't know, but I expect we'll see that bill again next session. So that was pretty much it.
Was that funded through obviously came coal severance?
Coal severance, yes.
Coal severance. The way that
the state, not the.
The governor initially left kind of a provision for if the General Assembly decides to do House Bill, to do the University of Pikeville, then kind of here's a provision where you can insert that out of the coal funds. So he kind of left it open in his budget. The House, of course, appropriated it, the coal severance funds, and it is all coal severance funds. It is not general fund money that would fund these scholarships. And so the way it would have ended is they were going to increase the appropriation. It's only going to be about $8 million. So, I mean, you can begin to imagine, and it went from $6,000 per student to a private institution and $2,000 or maybe $3,000 per student, I think it was two, for going to a public college. Absolutely no idea how that would play out, how many would take advantage. And there were some provisions for being able to carry that scholarship with a student if a university in one of those coal counties didn't offer the program that they wanted, like engineering, for example. So they could take that scholarship to WKU or to UKUL. But all coal severance money. Yeah, thanks.
I think seven counties in the western part of the state that produce coal severance revenue, and maybe seven or eight, but Lemington, Muhlenberg, Davis. Davis is a small amount, but it still counts as a coal county. But
Hopkins,
maybe Union. I can't remember the other counties.
I had them all written down.
We were pleased with that outcome because there could be a value to as Robin says, our Owensboro campus, but. I'm sure all that will resurface next year.
I would expect so. But there was it was always about using coal severance funds. Even for the University of Pikeville, the proposal was that the coal severance funds from the multi-county funds would...
That's what's going to
happen. From
the multi-county fund. What?
Yeah, and these are multi-county funds as well. And I've just told you all I know about the coal severance fund. I got one-third. I know that much.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Robin. Before I finish my report, I want to go on and give you a little bit of indication of the budget process. And there are a couple of reasons, and I normally don't like to hand out material at the meeting, but I think it's appropriate to do so. So if you all will circulate those to people on both sides, please. The calendar is something that we have to be mindful of, and I'm going to weave all these things together. The Council on Post-Secondary Education meets on June 21st. Our called meeting to approve our budget for next year is on June 22, and it's in that meeting that we would, if past practice is in play, that we would approve the tuition increase, which is part of the budget model that we will present to you for discussion. In the ideal world, the CPE would prefer that our board act on a tuition increase before we go to CPE for it to act on our requested tuition increase, because they, you know, get a little uncomfortable if they approve something that our board hadn't acted on, then my board comes back and does something different, and you got an awkward situation. And so therefore, what I am suggesting is that we have a finance committee meeting prior to the called budget meeting on June 22, and I'm suggesting June 1st, Friday, June 1st, as a date to have a called finance and budget committee meeting, at which time we'll be prepared to present to you the budget documents and have a budget discussion in the finance committee. And then the meeting on June 22nd would presumably have a recommendation from the Finance and Budget Committee, David, to approve the budget. But the discussion would take place in that committee, and of course any discussion that might need to occur on the 22nd as well. But that's what I would like to propose. So David, maybe from the course of the moment here, if you can poll your committee to see if everybody would be available for a Finance and Budget Committee meeting on June 1st, that would allow us to then go to CPE on the 21st saying that we have a committee recommendation for tuition that would suffice in terms of their action. Now, what I just circulated to you so that all of you can anticipate that is we're at the point now where the schedule is here for you of what we will be recommending in terms of tuition in that budget package. And in round numbers, it calls for a 4.8% increase for in-state Kentucky undergraduate students. Slightly different percentages and numbers when you get into graduate and so forth, but the 5% is the cap that CPE has approved for us to work within. So our number for in-state undergraduate residents would be what it would equate to 4.8%. So that's just so you can have this now in anticipation of the Finance and Budget Committee meeting on June 1st. And, of course, any discussion you'd like to have now or then would be welcome. On the back side of that page, the flip side of that page, Ann and her staff, working with all of the vice presidents, have really worked hard to zero in on our fixed cost number and, in this case, some strategic commitments that we feel like we have to fund in this budget. So the amount of new expenditures, either fixed or strategic, is listed for you on the backside, totaling $5.3 million. And you can see that far and away the largest number in here is student financial assistance, scholarships, and fellowships at almost $2.5 million. Again, going back to what Dr. Meredith and Dr. Emsley mentioned a moment ago, that comes back to the number of students seeking or who come in meeting the criteria we have for our best scholarships is unprecedented, and we want as many of those students on our campus as possible, but there is a price to pay for them. And factored into that, of course, is tuition. As tuition goes up 4.8%, the cost of a scholarship must go up 4.8%, or you have attrition in the value, the purchasing power of a scholarship, and then you'd be non-competitive in the marketplace. So those variables go into the scholarship financial aid number that you see here. So I thought it'd be helpful to go on and let you get a little bit of a jump start on the budgeting process with the two of the variables. And again, I've described this often over the last month or so to campus groups and external groups and anybody that had interest. But in very round numbers, we've got $3-5 million variables that we're dealing with. One is positive and two are negative. A tuition increase that would produce about $5 million. A budget cut, that's about $5 million, and fixed cost increases of about $5 million. And you see two of those three defined here. So our challenge as we speak is how do we deal with that $5 million budget reduction in light of really tuition increase really falls a little bit shy of covering our fixed cost increases. So how do we deal with the budget reduction? I would remind the board that we are honoring our commitment to not do a hiring freeze. We're moving forward with 77 faculty positions, Gordon, that are currently being filled. Very important in terms of quality and faculty-student ratio. Other institutions are having hiring freezes and are redirecting funds that has consequences. And we're not doing any furloughs, and we are not laying anyone off for financial reasons, for budget cutting reasons. And that's our resolve, and we're sticking to it. And I really want to commend and compliment and thank the vice presidents, the provost working with the deans, but all the vice presidents for the amount of effort that's gone in over the last few months, and particularly Ann and her staff. Because they found a way to give a little bit of relief to some of these smaller divisions, which frankly are 80% plus in personnel cost in their total budget and have very little operating budget as it is. And if we're going to stay true to our employees, we got to find other ways to get it done. And a lot of collaboration and good teamwork on the part of our vice presidents to address this matter in a way that most of the campus will not find offensive or too uncomfortable, frankly. And that, too, has had its own consequences because, you know, people get pretty comfortable thinking, well, we can just absorb $5 million and move right along. Well, it's not that easy, but a lot of work's being done. So that's a prelude for you, preview for you with regard to the budget process, and I thought that information would be helpful, and if the calendars work, hopefully we can meet on June 1st with a Finance and Budget Committee meeting. That work for you?
Yes.
Okay. All right. We will be back in touch with details, anybody have a hand up? No, excuse me. But we'll be back to you with specifics and the material in advance of that.
If you need another vote on the budget and audit, I just can't. I'm out of the country in June. You might want to appoint someone else to that committee, Mr. Chairman. Okay. Help David.
We'll make sure we have sufficient votes.
Yeah.
Good. Thank you, Larry.
Looks like I'll contact Cynthia. But it looks like Jim Kennedy and Rob and I are available. Please don't, and maybe Cynthia, hopefully.
Okay.
I have an idea of the time. Sure.
But what would you like? Early or mid-morning?
Something. Either one of those is fine with me.
I'm flexible.
9 o'clock.
Okay. 9 o'clock.
That works for me.
And around the meeting on the 22nd, we don't get many chances to do this, but we'll maybe try to have a lunch or dinner at home with the board. That before or after our June 22nd meeting, and look forward to that as well. That's all I got, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
To the last item, other business. I'll ask the President to comment on each of them as we go. Commencement, May 11th and 12th. Any comments?
I was starting to say pack a lunch. It'll be a long weekend, but you don't need to pack a lunch. We got you covered on that. You know, it's the time of year that's so exhilarating, but it is a challenging weekend. But we will have the graduate ceremony Friday evening, and we will have functions at the President's home certainly preceding that, and then on Saturday with the morning, afternoon, and evening ceremony. So the vice presidents have a routine down where they're allowed to miss one of the three, but they can pick which three out of four they can get to. But you all just need to choose which works best for you and your schedule. But please, Julia, let Julia know if you set a date by which time you need to get everybody's chosen, or send out
we'll
a form.
We'll need to know that Friday before.
Yeah. Julia will send out a checklist for you to respond to, which you can make. And that's important, because if going in, if we find that we've only got one or two of you for a given ceremony, we may come back and recruit some of you, because we need to have Regents' presence at each ceremony, because the two colleges that graduate in the evening need just as much focus and energy and attention and participation as those who participate in the morning or the afternoon session. And we don't want any of the three to be lacking in any way. So we will want to have as many of you as possible for each of the ceremonies. But I know that's a pretty big demand on your time and schedule, and for those for that 24-hour period.
I think the provost has.
Yes.
Yeah. I like commencement ceremonies. It's a Scottish thing. It's cheaper per, you know, gown rental, which is cheaper per use. But there are three additional ceremonies that I want to advise you of. On May 3rd at Glasgow, in the Plaza Theatre, we're having the graduand, we're calling it, recognition ceremony. It's about a week before commencement, and the Glasgow campus will recognize students scheduled to graduate. And then on May 13th, which is Sunday after the three undergraduate commencement ceremonies here in Bowling Green, I believe at 2 o'clock in the afternoon in Owensboro, we'll have a commencement ceremony. And then at 7 o'clock Eastern in Elizabethtown, we'll have the commencement ceremony for Elizabethtown, Radcliffe, Fort Knox. And you're all welcome to attend those if you have any energy left. Thank you.
And I really appreciate the provost. Splitting up that weekend a little bit, although Gordon will certainly be at our Friday and Saturday ceremonies. He's taking the lead on the regional campuses and make that a bit more manageable.
The special budget meeting on the 22nd we've covered. Our annual retreat on July 26th. Any comments?
Yes, we will. In fact, when you send out the notice for commencement, also include a sheet to submit anything you would like to request for our July retreat meeting. If there's anything on your mind that we need to discuss, or that you would like an agenda item, or even just a discussion item, please let Julia know or call me. But the preponderance of that retreat agenda will be focused on our action plan that will go forward for the next several years. Right now, we're looking at the time frame either 2012 to 2017 or through 2018, which would include three full biennia in the state budgeting process. That's action plan that has getting a lot of discussion and attention across the campus these days. I will be ready for discussion by this board in draft form at that point in time. So that will get a lot of our attention at the retreat.
And finally, our next board meeting will be on July 27th. Does anybody have any questions, comments on any of the agenda or the calendar items? Billy?
Well, this will be my last board meeting, and I just want to go ahead and just say that it was an honor and privilege to serve with everyone here, and that I will not be graduating. I'll be coming around for victory lap, so I might see y'all somewhere around on campus. So, but in all seriousness, thank you guys. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you,
Graduation. We'll see you there.
Just remind the board that this afternoon at 3 p.m. is a reception for Bob Adams, our retiring director of the Office of Student Publications. So you're all invited to the reception and a little presentation to Bob. 3 p.m. It starts at MMTH.
Thank you, Richard.
Yeah, there you go. Send those around, Gordon.
Here.
What room in this building?
The auditorium. Thank you. There's going to be a little reception outside the auditorium, and the program will begin in the auditorium.
Is there any other items you will bring to the attention of the board?
Mr. Chairman, I'm curious, after listening to the Supreme Court the other day on that gun issue.
Thank you. I
was worried we had a policy.
She had to go speak to a class.
We will ask Debbie to summarize that Supreme Court ruling and do an executive summary of how that might affect us going forward.
Well, it doesn't seem like you ought to terminate anybody if they have a gun in their glove compartment.
Well, I'm University of Kentucky is having to deal with that, and that's I don't envy that situation. But I will tell you that just if you're asking and you're looking for my first blush reaction to that, it's of concern. Mm-hmm. University campus is not like a city, even though we have 2,300 employees and 21,000 students, not all of whom are on this campus at any one given time, of course. But things happen in the course of human events. An assault or a robbery, we send out a text alert to everybody in our population. I mean, that doesn't happen in a city of Glasgow about the same size, for example. And so we're very proactive and very visible in alerting everyone in our midst when anything occurs. And it must be a safe place. And in my personal opinion, this is my personal opinion, there's no place for anyone on this campus to be carrying a firearm in their car or otherwise. Absolutely. That's my opinion. We certainly will respect the Supreme Court's opinion, but it is there are things that are not quite clear. What if a car is unlocked? What if somebody leaves a car unlocked intentionally, and a weapon is in that car? So it adds to the challenge of a university police department, Howard. I don't want to speak for you here, but it's something that we'll need to. We'll need to refocus our efforts within the police department given this ruling, because that changes the dynamics a little bit. I'm just reacting to your question, and I picked up the paper this morning just like you did and read the same thing. There are a lot of things that affect life on this campus that go way beyond what happens in our classrooms and laboratories and libraries that sometimes can be very consuming.
A great impact. This could have a great impact on our police response when they see a weapon. If that occurs, of course we definitely hope that it doesn't, but we'll be studying it. Deborah and I have already started emailing back and forth. We've got to make sure everyone's on the same wavelength and how we will respond to this.
And we may not get that out to you right away, because if my hunch is Debbie and the other general counsels across all eight universities are in communication and discussing that presently.
I'd like to see the policy once
you all make a decision.
Yeah, we will. Interestingly enough, Greg Stivers, who's our council on retainer, represented all eight universities in the Council on Post-Secondary Education in that case, which I was proud of because all of them selected him to do that. So I was kind of proud that our WKU council was the attorney that was appearing before the court to talk about our campuses and why it's important to prohibit weapons on our campuses. You know, the next step, residences, residence hall rooms. I mean, there's some consequence, maybe even unintended, but this is not an insignificant matter.
Anybody got anything else? Entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Made, seconded. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We are adjourned.
We have lunch outside. Anyone that would like to stick around, or we have to go?